Hello out there, guys. Hope you're all doing really wonderful out there. We're back today with another podcast. I've got a very, very fascinating guest, someone I've been really excited about having on the channel for a long time now. Finally got hold of him and managed to organize this. Before we get into it, as usual, guys, if you are new around here, please consider liking the video, subscribing, sharing, all of that stuff really helps the channel out. So, my guest today is Howdy Mikowski. Now, just a short intro. Howdy Mikowski is the author of four books: Falling for Truth, The Power of Then, Exposing the Exposition, and his new book, Exit the Cave. Howdy began his life as a stand-up comedian and hockey coach, but began to study the ancient civilizations of Egypt and Mexico in 1997. This led to the study of Zen, native Indian medicine, alchemy, Gnosticism, and comparative religions and spirituality. This study led to the power of then. He had a death experience in 2005 that led him to change his research and writing focus to present his new insight, that of dealing with reality and the self in a completely different way, and became Falling for the Truth. He has a YouTube channel and his website is, I've just lost it. Where is it? We will get it there in the end. What's your website,
Egyptian-wisdom-revealed.com. Yeah.
Howdy? There we go.
Why I made it so difficult, I don't know, but I did.
Well, it's an interesting one. Anyway, Howdy, it's great to have you here. How are you doing? How is it up there in the north in the freezing cold?
Yeah, I was like we were saying, it's normally it's going to get minus 20 up here, and we've been good. We've been like minus 5 for a lot of this month, so it's actually been bearable. You can walk outside, and yeah, so that's been good.
Maybe it's global warming.
I don't know what it is, but
So what
I,
made you
it's great because I was I've been looking forward to talking to you for quite a while because there's not a lot of YouTube channels that I still go and actually watch, and I really like what you're doing, what you're trying to share, particularly trying to show that the new age is not what we've been told it is, and so many of our ideas and concepts of reality are so similar. So I've been looking forward to this for a while.
Yeah, I think our work, there's a lot of crossovers. And I know from my point of view, a lot of my subscribers, I'm always looking in the chat and they're like, get Howdy on, get Howdy on. So I'm like, who is this Howdy guy? And then you reached out to me with email
Yeah.
with your book. And yeah, so I think it was meant to happen. So it's probably taken a little bit longer than it should have, but you're here now. So
Sure.
how did you end up living where you live? I'm curious.
This is one of those
What made you
circumstances. I
go
got
up there?
married.
Sorry?
Yeah, I got married. So that's she had a much more stable life than I did. And being a Canadian, there's really not much difference weather-wise between Canada and Norway. So it made sense to just come here.
Right. Okay. Excellent. And so, if you wouldn't mind just starting to just explain a little bit of your life, because it seems quite interesting. You used to be a comedian and then a hockey player, like, your life seems to have taken all these different directions.
Yeah, I've had so many, and this is, I you know, when I look into parallel lives later, I get the sense that I took a lot of the things that I did into depth in the, in these other lives, but in this one, I just was touching on them, trying to force things to happen that didn't work. Teenager, I was a pretty normal guy. Yep, just a hockey player in Canada, liked life, enjoyed things, had a pretty optimistic view, I guess, of life. But I had a psychopath for a father. So I had a very challenging home environment, of course. And in my last year of university, he stole all my money. So it was this right at the point where I'm trying to finish my degree and begin your life as a young person, this pretty fairly tragic thing occurs. Just as I get make it through university, I actually get that to happen, my ex-girlfriend gets murdered. And right, yeah. So right after that, it caused this giant overturning of like, well, what is life supposed to be then? Because my getting too much glare in my glasses, I'll take them off. Is well, what is life supposed to be then? And it really began a start of a spiritual journey. Most people wouldn't call it that because they expect you're supposed to sit down and you're supposed to meditate and you're supposed to these mantras and you're supposed to, but I just sat there for long periods of time wondering, why does a woman who's living her life perfectly, doing what you're supposed to do, lovely woman, is now dead? Something's not right with the universe. And it took me a lot. I went through it spun me into a really deep depression for about 3 years. Really, really bad. It got to the point I wanted to kill myself. I was actually thinking of is there a way I could do it that wouldn't create a mess for the person finding it? And at this almost depth of that, there came a program on TV. It was the day after my birthday in 1997 on Egyptian pyramid building. And it was like an instantaneous flash of something. It's like, ancient Egypt has a secret and I'm supposed to go find it. And it just regalvanized all my energy. And I put 8 years into that to study it, to write the book. I was in Mexico, like where you are now, and just loved the experience, loved the sights. I was lucky, really, really lucky, because I met a Korean Zen monk. I spent time with several native medicine men on their reserves, some Chinese Qigong doctors, some wisdom teachers from the Amazon and Africa. So I was like lucky, doors open. But then by about 2004, I started to think I knew a lot. I thought I was pretty smart. And then I fell in the canyon and had this death experience. And in the death experience, I kind of realized I had come to it from all the work, because I worked really hard for those 8 years with a lot of external practice to see that reality wasn't real, that it was transparent. But I was still real. And from the canyon experience, I realized, oh, I'm not real either. I'm as fake as reality. And that put me into about a 10-year period of combination of extreme clarity at times, real clarity, extreme confusion. I got sunk into some egoic stuff at that time that was from errors that were made because I didn't integrate the experience. I rushed back in the world way too quickly. Illnesses that have been kind of going on for 15 years, they come and they go. No one can explain what they are. There's no reason why they come. There's no reason why they leave. I've gone through all of a very, very difficult 15 years. And then around 2019, I was studying some cathedrals in Florence. For their energetic structures, for how they operated as machines. And when I got back from that research, I bumped into the World's Fairs and realized this is the craziest, most bizarre thing I've ever seen. And I threw myself into that book. That came out at the end of 2019, right at the time our stupidity started, right? And realizing, oh, wow, I think I just wrote a book about the last reset we had, and now we're going into the new one. Did that for a couple of years, and then early about March or April of this year, I wanted to put a book out on Plato's cave. That was kind of, I wanted to talk about that and exiting the cave. And as I just went deeper and deeper, I got more and more honest with myself and finally had to acknowledge, now this is a soul trap. This reality is a giant trap of souls for energy harvesting. And so it's time to just be honest and just not hide anymore. Just bring it out honestly. And that's what Exit the Cave was me writing and digging into this as honestly as I can. And here we are.
Interesting. Just going back to
you. Sorry. And then I didn't, the other part I didn't, because you asked about it. And yes, between 1990 and about 2005, I was a stand-up comedian. So I did do that for 15 years. And yeah, after that, I became a hockey coach. And so I have had a very odd life. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Was you more Bill Hicks or George Carlin, or you had your own?
George Carlin was brilliant, absolutely brilliant with what he did. Yeah. I was not that brilliant.
Yeah. So just going back to your death experience, you used the words there. You realized that your life was fake. Could you just put some meat on the bones to that and what you mean by that?
Yeah. So like I say, before that, I had done 8 years of work from what the medicine man had gave me from, you know, when I read all of Castaneda's books and I did them, you know, I did a life recapitulation. I did. And so reality had become transparent. But when I fell in the canyon, it's a river in near Canada's largest waterfall. And I fell in right in front of the waterfall. And simplifying the experience was realizing that this is where I was going to die. That there was no way I could get out. The river was just too hard. I couldn't swim against it, actually. And I was just being pulled to the waterfall. And in the moment of realizing I was going to die there, there was no concern of trying to make my life continue or anything else. It was more a sense of, okay, this is where I'm going to die and I'm going to have front row seats. It was an incredible acceptance of the experience. And once I had the acceptance of what was going to happen, everything I would classify as me just fell away. So thoughts, feelings, emotions, fears, hopes, experiences, memory, it was all just gone. And all that was happening from in microseconds we're talking now was I call clusters of information would just come up, burst in front of my eyes, and it would be like this. Anything that was kind of was important to know would just come like this and then disappear, and it was instantly known. At the same time, I got what I classified as a download. It was almost like someone put a stick in the back of my head, and just I could feel like data just blowing into my head. And a lot of the last 20 years has kind of just been me unraveling the files that was put into the download. But to specifically answer your question, once all of this stuff was gone and all that was left was this awareness, was this clear observing awareness, I realized all of those other things are not me. Me is only this awareness. All this other stuff was just like a covering. And here in the time I would need them the most, when I'm in a death experience, they're gone. They just didn't exist. And it was only because a friend of mine fell in at the same time I did. We both fell in. And I turned to see him. He was dog paddling in place. And all of a sudden, a new thought cluster came up. If I don't get out, how is he going to get out? And I hit a boulder with my leg that was a little bit higher on the bottom of the river and kind of deflected me off course towards the side. And it just happened to be a bit more less steep there. So I could actually feel the bottom with my toes. And I was able to just to pull myself out of the current enough to crawl out. And as I was crawling out, I was trying to yell to him, it's shallow, it's shallow. And I was, my mind was, can I find a tree branch to, you know, but he was crawling out too. Yeah. And we both sat there for about an hour and didn't say anything. We just sat beside the river and in peaceful time. And then we shared for about an hour our experiences, which is almost exactly the same. And we kind of had this connection then for the next year or so that we could share our challenges together. So that's a sort of an overview of the experience.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, I can relate to that somewhat. I mean, I didn't have a death experience, but the closest thing that I would imagine that similar to what you felt is I took some psychedelics on a beach in Cambodia once. I don't recommend doing it anymore, but I do remember that there I fell into what I would say a pale of insignificance, like everything or like you said, all my thoughts, all my fears, like I my ego, who like my passions, the things that I thought I was seeing, it just all paled down into like you say, into like a greater awareness. And I remember thinking at the time, I was a little bit peed off because I was like, hang on a minute, I've built this person and now he's gone, right? I'm just part. Right. And it was a very sort of kind of ego shattering moment. But I guess when you take a step back and you process it, it's actually quite incredible, really, because I guess we're part of everything.
Yeah, I was at first, of course, I only saw the experience in good terms. Everything about it was beautiful. Everything about it was, but I started, there was two problems that came for me anyway. One was an error I made in my assumptions about what I saw from it. The other was realizing I was being manipulated by entities afterwards, not knowing that that's what was going on. So what I mean by the first part was in the experience, I thought I had total knowledge. When I came out of there, I thought I know everything now, egoically, right? I think I have a spiritual ego was being built. And the problem was I did know everything in a small part of the screen. So the light flashed here and I did get a complete knowledge of this area. The rest of it, because it's holographic, I get fooled to thinking you know all of that, but you didn't. You just got a glimpse over there, but that ego began to think, well, I do know everything. And that spun me out for quite a while. It took a lot of hard pain to start stepping back, to start getting comfortable with what do I really know from the experience? And what is the stuff that's just things that are on the outside that I really shouldn't talk about that I don't know for sure. So it was something though that slowed me down for a lot of years. And again, if somebody has an experience like this, please take 6 months or a year to be still, to contemplate it, to spend time by yourself, spend time with some people that you trust, that you think you can share the experience with. In 2 months, I was back in the world and I was even doing some lectures on it. And that was just a big mistake. That was a big mistake. And it's taken 10 or 15 years to correct it.
Interesting. And you said that you were manipulated by entities, which is obviously something I speak a lot about on my channel.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, because a lot of the things that became Exit the Cave, a lot of the work that's in this book had begun 20 years ago. I had a lot of the notes. And after I wrote the Egypt book, I was writing a book at the time that had a lot of these ideas already in it. But after I had the experience, it's like I got pushed more towards standard spirituality, unity, awareness, oneness, which I see is true. It's not actually false, but again, it's just a small piece of a much giant package. It's just the piece that gets presented by the spiritual marketplace as, because it's safe, it feels good, it's nice. And even though I didn't fully believe it, I also kind of said, but well, everyone else is saying this, so maybe I should focus on that. And I did for a while, and it took a while as well to kind of burst myself out and just say, no, you know, all this other stuff it's a pretty dark, I call this place now a suffering pit of hell. And
call it
until you, until you acknowledge it's a suffering pit of hell, it's gotcha. You know, it's gotcha in so many ways. And so it's taken time for me to unravel a lot of this stuff and be comfortable, I feel, to share things in a pretty calm, grounded way. It's another thing I really like about you, Tony. You're talking about difficult subjects with people, but it's, you know, very grounded, it's easy for people to relate, because so often if somebody's actually giving some good information, sometimes you kind of can't trust them, because you're like, well, this person sounds a little out there. They've missed the grounding part. And it's taken me a while to learn to be grounded with this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that you touched on there that's been bothering me actually the last few weeks is this idea of oneness. We're all one. And I do think that is used against us, especially in like the New Age spiritual community.
Yeah.
And the more I go down this path and this journey, I realize that, okay, at some level, we might all just merge into this one consciousness. But this is very much a solo journey. And we know from the soul mill, the recycling, that they are trapping individual souls. And you look at the word soul, what does soul mean? It means solo. So it's almost like, it's kind of like a half-truth that's being used to manipulate.
Yeah.
When in actual fact, it's really important that in this experience, we do have to realize that we are individual souls as well, making decisions and directing this fractal of consciousness into certain areas, both good or bad, depending on our decision making. What's your opinion on this whole idea of oneness?
Yeah, now, of course, now I've come a long way from what I would have said 15 years ago, right? I get the sense there's actually different kinds of oneness now, even. Because now I've really dug into what the Gnostics say, what the Cathars say about creation and what this reality really is and how it was done. I get the sense that we are all one soul, you might say, that maybe just one soul came into this reality, or with the divine spark. One divine spark came into this simulation and then was fragmented into many souls. So from the soul perspective, there's only one soul, but we're individually, or there's only one divine spark, there's many individual souls. But we've got a second problem, that the simulation itself, the things that are all the divine sparks are in, and what the NPCs and the regular things around, that's also one thing, because that's just a computer program that has been built. So depending on which way you look at things, you could see them all as one, but you wouldn't see that there's actually two separate absolutes, depending on how you view this reality.
Yeah.
And certainly the Gnostics, for example, talk about that there is an absolute, there is an actual absolute totality, but it's not here. It's not in the matrix. It's not in the cave. So as long as there is a level of the cave or a level of awareness, doesn't matter, astral realm, etheric realm, super duper wonderful realm, it's still not true absolute. It's still just a type of copy. It's still just a type of manufactured awareness, even though it can feel like it. So I get the sense we feel this oneness and we get tricked into thinking it's the real one as opposed to the copy of what's actually true.
Yeah, fascinating. So in your work or in your near or your death experience, did you have one of these NDEs or was it just these insights that you had? Because there's a lot of people having these NDEs, and there's a really good channel for Forever Conscious Research. I don't know if you're aware of that guy, and he breaks them down incredibly well, where these people are just going to the light or whatever, and they're being, you know, they're being coerced and manipulated back in, guilt tripped with karma and all of this stuff. Did you have any of that happen or?
No, that I didn't. I didn't have that particular experience. And yeah, Mark does a great job on his channel, doesn't he? It's like, and I'm also grateful for all the people who are sharing them. There's also a website called NDERF, Near Death Experience Research Foundation.org or something. And they've got like 5,000 near death experiences that you can actually search by topic. And these are important, valuable pieces of information for us of what have people gone through. The trick is, like I kind of shared in my book, that there's a standard near-death experience, the one we all hear about and think about, you know, the white light, the tunnel, the dead grandma, Jesus, the love bomb, the real life review. That's about 85 to 90% of what people have. But then there's these other 10% that are not anything like that at all. And I'm almost now getting the sense like the standard near-death experience is like being in the dentist's waiting room. You're kind of getting a very light, simplified version because they know you're not supposed to go too far and they don't want to scare anybody. And a few, though, make it past the door much further, and they're the ones that start revealing what might be really going on. So to me, it's so valuable to dig through these experiences. And like you, you know, we don't know for sure. All we can do is take what we can get from information, take our own experience, take our own intuition, share that, come up with an understanding ourselves. But like you, we're both seeing that it's certainly something I'm not going to want to be a part of. Certainly instantaneously, because everything about it indicates trap, deception, coercion, pressure. And if it's really a great, wonderful thing, they won't mind giving us 100 years to think about it before we choose to go in. They would never want to pressure us into something if it's truly loving and wonderful, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what I found interesting the other day, I was watching one of Mark's videos, and it seems to be that these NDEers are coming down, or a lot of the time they don't want to come back. If you watch these, right, there's great resistance a lot of the time, and these entities are saying, oh, it's not your time, you know, you've got work to do, or they try and use family members to guilt trip. What about your daughter or your son? You know, he needs you, she needs you, and the soul's like, no, I don't want to go back. And it's almost like then they start saying, well, you've got a mission, you've got a purpose, you've got to start spreading this information to people. So now it seems like they're running this this scheme now of sending NDEs back down to speak of their amazing experience where Jesus showed up, or you know, who, whatever flavor of whatever they believed in showed up. And now that all these NDEs are coming out, and so people are watching these NDEs, and they're like almost taking a sigh of relief, like, oh, so at least I know now that when I die, I'm going to be met with Jesus. Or so they're running this agenda to get people hooked in before they even die now. So I find it fascinating what's going on with that.
Yeah, I just did an interview like last week with Jeff Mara. He's one of the guys that has one of these big near-death experience channels.
Yeah, I've been on.
And it was interesting. Yeah, it's been interesting to watch the comment section after. It was, first of all, there was like 40 to 50% extremely positive, so thankful I was there. It was also valuable to see the 50% that was you know, very unhappy that I was talking about these subjects. And it was interesting when they'd say things like, you know, there's no guilt that happens in a near-death experience. The life review has only been wonderful and joyous. And it's like, but I know if I went and heard their experience, that's it would be in there. They've just chosen to chop off certain things to remember the things that are the most happy and chop off the little things, block those off. I almost think that people should go back and hear their own near-death experience really, really clearly again to kind of see what have you kind of chosen to ignore, because there are warning signs in all of them. People seem to ignore their own warning signs.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny the other day. I was realizing that they record everything in your life, right? So right. I was like, record this. We could put that in your movie when I come up. It's like, take that. But yeah, I mean, I've been on Jeff's show, and there was a little bit of resistance of me actually going on initially because of our viewpoints. So I think I'd just been recommended by a viewer, but I went on and I had the similar kind of thing. But I also went on another NDE review channel. And I started talking, and after 15 minutes of me talking, she cut me off and hung up the Zoom call. it's hard to get across your point to a lot of these people because it all sounds so good to them. You know, who doesn't want to be met by Archangel Michael or a grandfather that you love dearly, or you know, so this information, it's really sensitive, and you can understand why people get really upset and triggered. But what I try and get across to people is that what do you want? Do you want to feel good temporarily in this lifetime, or do you want to get out of this hellhole, as you describe it? That's what we're battling against now, and this.
Yeah.
It's really going into, and this is what I like about what you do, going into these areas that people really don't want to go to, and it almost hurts. I mean, I've had people literally break down when I've said, look, don't connect with angels. And they're like, well, who do I connect to then? And this is where people's mindsets are. We're so far away from sovereignty that we risk it's going to be used against us if we don't wake up to all of this and face what we need to face, as you say.
Yeah, I'll share. This is an interesting story for you that right on what you're just saying that I know you'll like. It's I've been thinking about the idea of prayer, like you're saying, and how usually praying just makes us pray because we're always focusing the energy on something outside of ourselves, something that's out there that we don't know what it is. Why don't we pray to ourselves? Why don't we pray to our own power? And I was sharing that with a medicine man friend in the summer, Jerry Dunson. And he said, I'm going to tell you a story. He said, many years, 20 years ago, there was a big drought in New Mexico or Arizona or something. And they'd called local medicine men in to pray for rain, and it didn't rain. So they called another medicine man in from the north, and he came down, he did a ceremony, and it rained right away. And they asked him, why did your ceremony work when all the others didn't? And he said, oh, the others, they were praying for rain. So if you're praying for something, it means it's not here. He said, I just prayed rain. So I said back to Jerry, I said, so what he did is he first became rain himself. So then it wasn't human praying to rain. It was rain praying to rain. So the only thing that existed was rain. So it had to rain. And Jerry said, yeah, now you're getting it. So the next day, it was in my blueberry picking season. And I'd learned from my native medicine men that I'd been with how to leave an offering and thank the forest and thank the blueberries. But this time I decided I'm going to become a blueberry first. So I took 15 minutes and put myself into the space of what does a blueberry feel? How does it think? And then I said my prayer of thanks. When we went to pick the blueberries, there was more than we could ever possibly pick in a day. It was everywhere. And I realized there is an unbelievable secret. Become what you want to pray to first, and how can it not manifest?
Wow, that's incredible. And it makes so much sense. I mean, I'm always trying to get across to people that, you know, we're actually incredible. We're incredible creative beings, and we don't know even a quarter of what we're capable of. you know, our psychic abilities, remote viewing, all this probably telepathy, teleportation, who knows, right? And you know, if we could only realize that what we're seeking outside of us is internal, which is basically what you've done there and your medicine man friend, is that they've used their own creative abilities to bring into fruition, literally, the thing that they desired. And yeah, I definitely feel that we don't know the half of what we can do. No.
And one of the things, of course, that I know that always interests me when I hear you talk about, you know, the dangers of chakras and what are they anyway? And because in the Taoist tradition, I've been thinking about this for years before I bumped into your channel, but in the Taoist tradition, for example, they don't have this idea. They have internal energy sources, right? They have internal dantian. So we have an energy source internally. And I started, why do we need an energy source then that's external, that's outside of us? That doesn't make sense. What's wrong with the ones inside? And it started to click in. That's possibly then just another way of sucking us energetically and mentally outside rather than within where the power is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The dantian points, the three around the third eye, the heart and the sacral. Yeah. Are organic, energetic, energy vortexes, I guess you would call them. Right. And the seven beautiful lotus flower, rainbow colored ones that they promote in the New Age is like the most evil thing that there could be, like this implant. So, it's the deception. It's incredible. Like I always say, you know, I hate what they're doing to us, but the way they've done it, that how they are so manipulative and deceptive, and they fly under the radar so much with so many different things, even with psyops and controlled opposition and all this stuff. And they've layered this matrix. It's like, you think like you said earlier, you thought you had it, you thought you knew it all. And then boom, you get slapped with another piece of information and you realize actually that you didn't have it at all. So we have to be, always have to be open to, okay, I feel this is true. Maybe there's more. Maybe there's more to this. I've shifted from, oh, I know this, to continuing to be open and never saying that I've got the answers to everything definitely.
Yeah. And that's, like I say, I've gone through periods of my life where you think you got it and then all of a sudden, no, I don't. And it's a really good place to be for people out there. If you're in, it is a good place to be because it means you're dropping things. And that was how one of the guys I came to trust over my, I didn't get into his work until he had died, but Richard Rose, who said, you can't go towards truth because you don't know what it is. All you can do is find false, drop it, let it go and keep moving. And eventually you'll come to one thing that you can't drop. You'll try it and you just can't drop it. And then you'll realize that's the truth. And you'll also know you've got it because it'll be unlike anything you ever thought it was going to be. If you just wind up what you think it was going to be, then you're probably just fooling yourself. It's going to be so shocking and surprising that you're like, that's the truth. Holy crap.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about, I did a video yesterday about my experiences with NPCs and they're really becoming apparent. I think since the solutions to the illness, it's almost become like more like they stand out even further now. Now you're up there quite isolated, so you don't have too much dealing with them, do you? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I myself, I did a couple of videos on them, like about 2 weeks ago or something, and like massive views, massive comments. So others are recognizing this situation. I'm now calling them. I've got a name for them now. Potential soul vehicles, because there was this thing of, oh, you're creating a us against them ideology with this kind of naming process. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I could see that. So let's change the name. It just seems like they have everything we have. They're completely human. They have all the functions, all the similar thought processes, all that, but there's a philosophical depth missing. That there's for some reason, when there's something that you'd say you should, this requires some thought, this requires some critical thinking, it's just not there. It's just an automatic acceptance of whatever it is, and then just continue moving on. It's like just how to contemplate the least you have to do to continue your functioning during the day. And yeah, I'm starting to wonder if we're talking maybe 90% of the population, maybe even more.
Yeah, I would say it's a huge amount. And it's that that Agent Smith program, isn't it, in The Matrix, right. Whereby if you challenge their worldview, or say, like you say, maybe you need to research into this, it's almost like this: a switch is flipped in the head, and they either get defensive, angry, they start ridiculing you, it's such a bizarre thing to observe once you're aware of it. I've had my video yesterday. I've had so much interference with NPCs recently. I probably need to move somewhere out in the sticks. I think these people are often like entity ridden, and who knows what's running through them, AI, and it's kind of sad, but it's again something that we need to be aware of and understand, right?
Right, and it would explain a lot of experiences in our life. It makes more sense when you start looking at, because another thing I had said, I got two thoughts that came up. I just have to write them down, or I'd forget them. Let's say that number's correct. Let's say I was correct with 90%. So in a city of 600,000, that means there's 60,000 divine sparked full souls living in that. And I think it's something about those non-NPCs find each other out somehow. You're in the same coffee shop, and for some reason you notice that person and you talk to them, you say hi, and you strike up a friendship easier. So, you know, I get a sense like out of 20, just by the, if that number is right, 18 should be NPCs of your friends, but I don't think that's probably true. It's probably more like 10 to 10. The divine sparks kind of know each other, feel each other, and we move together with one another. So I think that's the first thing we should recognize, that it's, there may be a lot out there, but for some reason we don't feel that connection. So we don't generally make the friendships. The other is a story that tells you, I think, how strange this could be, is I was in my mother's town, like, before I had my death experience, and I was going through this testing of reality. And I started wondering, there's streets I never walk down in her town. What would happen if I walked down a street I never walked down? What would that be like? So I just did my normal walk, my normal pace, and then quickly just ran across a field to a street I never went on to. It was deserted, middle of the day, deserted. There's just nothing going on, zero. I just stood there and I waited. After 8 seconds, all the doors open, people started coming out, getting in their cars, going, dogs started running on the street. And I'm like, holy crap, it's like the Truman Show. I'm like, I'm actually in the Truman Show. And right. I just was like, I was freaked out for a couple of days, right. Actually.
Yeah, it's incredible. In that video yesterday, I was saying that I was just starting to think, oh, it's been quiet around here for a few days now. And I'm not joking you. If you could invent the worst person, like create the worst annoying person in the world, you would create this guy. I have never met anyone like him in my life. He's loud, he's obnoxious, he's ignorant, he blasts his music, he does drugs, he smokes weed. Like, I have to laugh, because I know if I don't laugh, I'll get angry, and I know that's what the Matrix wants. But this guy is 100% a plant from the Matrix, and it's no coincidence. I've got a course coming up that I'm going to be releasing, and all this stuff that I'm doing, all these interviews with people like yourself, and I can see that they're cranking it up. And I had so many comments in that video of people that like, oh, I can't believe you pointed that out, because this happened to me, and oh, I'm glad I'm not the only one. And it's interesting how the Matrix targets people.
Yeah, that's something I've come to notice even more. I highly recommend for anybody out there that really wants to do something, to do a type of life review, to do some sort of, maybe not. We're running in out of time now. I mean, things are changing so quickly now. And my first life recapitulation took me 4.5 years to run through my entire life. But there's ways we can do it in a more simplified way. But to see our life experience honestly, because we think we, I thought I knew my life. I thought I knew my stories. And it wasn't until I did the recapitulation and realized a lot of the stuff was completely the opposite of how I'd ever thought it was.
So when
And
you
key moments, and key moments were just buried away. I literally, they had to just blast out of me all of a sudden, like, oh crap, how did I forget that? So to me, I think that's a really important part of it, because some of the things we see how reality plays with us, what's the tricks it uses against us, and we begin to see also our own looping patterns. How many things are we doing is the same over and over and over again? And until we really review our past experience, it's hard to see so many of these pieces that you're talking about in the way this is structured.
So when you're saying a life review, are you talking about like going back and seeing where we're being influenced by the matrix or just our patterns? What sort of things are you talking about there specifically?
When I actually did it, I followed I got originally from Carlos Castaneda, his ideas and from his books, and then I talked to one of the medicine men, and he gave me some clues of ideas of how to sort of make it work logically. But it was to remember every encounter I ever had in the course of my life and get to the point where I could be reliving the encounter. So I actually had a list of like 3,000 people that I had met in my life. I had on that list, I had another 10,000, let's say, experiences of what I had with these people. And then I would just sit still and remember everything I could about that experience. And then the next experience, and the next experience, and the next experience. Unbelievably dull and boring until I got near the end of it. And then the hidden stuff started to reveal itself. And I began to understand why you do it. And the second piece of why I think we do this is, it seems like the life review is going to try to be thrown at us at the end of our, in the near-death experience. And that near-death review, as you well know, is all about guilt and shame. Guilt, shame, and regret. We're not going to show you what you did good. We want to show you all the places that you've done something wrong. You screwed up. You didn't pick up that apple for the woman who dropped it at the store. And that's what, you know. And if we've done a really good life review, so there's no surprises in our past, even if that tries to get thrown at us, we're able to just say, yeah, I know all this already. I know it. I've gone through it. I've transformed. I've grown. Next. And I think that's also, it's not just for our life now. It's to be prepared for that potential moment. And we can just, nope, I'm done. I don't need that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we can bypass that whole process completely with just awareness of it. And, you know, our intention is so incredibly strong, especially in that dimension where it's instant. It's almost like, oh, there's a false white light. I'm going the other way. So hopefully we can bypass that whole trap. But of course, yeah, I
I
mean,
guess that the trick is, and this would be a question I have for you, and that is, of course, once we cross over into the astral realm, it's like being in the dreaming, it's like having a dreaming experience. And we know it's so hard to stay lucid in that experience. One thing happens and we're in it. We believe it's real and it's really happening. What do you have as a suggestion so that somebody can begin preparing well now so that we don't get sucked in there, that we keep that awareness? We know what's going on. Oh yeah, after death, I'm staying in my power, not, oh, I'm following the rabbit, I'm following, and boom. What would be your suggestion?
I would only say what I'm gonna do. When I have the realization that I'm dead, literally I'm out of this matrix. I'm not gonna engage with any light beings, anything that approaches me, loved ones, anything like that. I'm sovereign and I'm leaving. I'm setting such a strong intention to leave, and I'm not gonna engage with anything until I'm sure, which comes with our discernment, that I'm out of this matrix. Because I think that I do think that we're that powerful. I don't think that we can, I don't think that they can necessarily like lure us in with the tunnel and you know, start playing with those games with us. I think that we're that powerful that we can bypass that. So that's really what I do. I believe that the truth to that is simple, and that is just set your intention 100% to leave. Don't engage with anything, just leave. And then hopefully, I guess then you get to a place where maybe you feel that kind of like I don't know what you felt in that death experience, that being part of everything and just out of this matrix. But even Mark makes a good point, and I have to hold my hands up because I'm guilty of using the term false white light. And Mark actually said that in one of his videos recently, like, what is the real light? I mean, who said light is the way, right? So even if, you know, you see a golden light, who's to say that that might not? And I don't want to scare people. I'm just saying that,
right,
you know, I probably need to stop using that term because we have this association with the light, maybe on a subconscious level. And I think it's just discernment, discernment, discernment. And the more you practice discernment in this lifetime, that then becomes easier when we cross over and preparing for death, like you said, yeah, looking back at your life, but also, okay, what am I going to do when I leave? So what am I going to do if this happens or that happens? For me, I think we're strong enough to just leave with intention alone. And that's my plan anyway. If they do manage to hook me into some kind of life review, or I'll be giving them the bird, as I did live, so they've got the recording of that. So yeah, I think once you become aware of their tricks and manipulations, it loses all its power. The tough one for people to take is like a close loved one. You know, I've often thought, God, if I saw my granddad there, that would be like pretty hard to just, but I will, I'll just ignore him. But yeah, a lot of people find that one hard to swallow, you know, if they've been exceptionally close with a family member. And of course, you know, people that are religious, you know, it's a hard truth. It will be used against you, you know, Buddhism, Jesus, God, like, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's going to be used against you. So it's upsetting, it's triggering, it's hurtful. But if you are engaged in any of the Matrix programs, when you die, they will be used against you. That's what I've concluded from, you know, your information, Mark's information, and my own feelings on it.
Yeah, I'm kind of, every once in a while, I'm sort of playing like a journey type thing where I'm sort of placing myself and, okay, I'm dead now. What's the first thing? What's the thoughts I want to have run through my mind from the standpoint of staying, you know, clear and aware, just so that maybe like I'm creating like a loop or creating like a pattern in my consciousness so that it'll be like an automatic trigger in that moment. Because I think for anybody, I think the best choice, yeah, if you can't just have total awareness and just say, I'm going home. Like that's the words I'm using. I'm going home now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done with the games. I'm going home. Get out of my way. But if somebody, I think at the very least is to come up with the idea of something like, I'm taking my time to look around. Leave me alone.
Yeah,
that I think is valuable enough, just because then you're giving yourself space and you're giving yourself the opportunity to lay down the groundwork of where am I, what's going on, what do, because somebody might decide, I really do want to reincarnate, I want to come back to Earth, I want to experience this again. But at least by giving yourself time, I think you've given yourself to make sure that's what I really want. Okay, it's not an immediate pull, it's not like a magnetic thing, you're not forced into it, you've truly chosen. I think that's also something that's can be valuable for the average person listening to us today.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, we are creative beings, and creating and manifesting in this dimension is a lot slower because it's physical. But in that dimension, right, you create instantly. So who's to say that when you die, you don't create a world for yourself or a safe space? I mean, yeah, what are we capable of? Where do you draw the limits of what we're capable of? Why could we not create a safe place with a lake and trees, and that where we could just sit and just, you know, without being manipulated by any outside matrix forces, and then from there we can decide what we do. So I think the opportunities are endless, really. But we just want to make sure we're not engaging with any of their games and laws, and Because I have heard in some of Mark's reviews where if you're not really kind of like, if you're sort of not really sure, like you're a bit like maybe I'll, then they'll come in and they'll use some kind of manipulation to like try and lure you back. That's what I gleaned from watching his reviews. So I think to be sure that we don't want to come back 100%, and then maybe we could create this place where we can just work out where we go next, even though it's not back here. But this is what I'm saying, you know, we have to ponder on this before we die rather than leave it to chance. We've really got to drop all these matrix belief systems that are hard to give up for people, because a lot of them are based around savior programming, you know, and redemption and karma and things like that. What's your view on karma?
I've been now recently influenced over the last 4 or 5 months by a book by Angelica Anagnostou called Can You Stand the Truth? Really harsh, like harsh book. 800 pages long. Yeah, really good. And she kind of got a really interesting presentation of karma, which I had never thought of. And that is that there are, beyond the archons that are running this dimension and running this simulation and whatnot, that we humans have also created demonic-like beings from our thoughts. Thought forms have manifested into like a second layer of astral beings. So we've got two types of beings eating us. Of those astral beings, one are negative, one are positive. And we live in a particular way that are feeding one of the beings more than the others. So if we die and we go into the reincarnation cycle, these certain beings have gotten used to a certain kind of energy. They'll push us into a similar kind of life. So if we were really negative in this life, those entities will push us back into another negative living life to keep their energy flow. If we had lived a kind of positive kind of life, feeding those entities, they'll push us back. And, you know, we think it's so difficult, because we think there's a good and bad, there's an evil and a nice way of living here, as if one side feeds the demons and another side doesn't. And that's another one, I think, of the tricks that even when you're on the good side, even though it feels nicer and you're being more valuable, where's that energy going? And what's the third force, a way we can live that's completely balanced between the two, that's not on either side, where nothing is eating our energy, we're keeping it to ourselves. So that's long answer of now how I kind of see what karma is doing. It's returning us back to the next type of food source for the entities that got used to eating us. Awful thing to say, but that's how I see it.
Well, they definitely use karma to guilt trip people back down, that's for sure, because we hear that over and over again with the NDEs. I mean, we could talk all day about this. I think it's really important to really cover the deaths thing. I know it's kind of morbid, but it's the most important thing that anyone can learn in this lifetime, unless, like you say, they want to come back down here.
Yeah, it's a guarantee. It's the only thing we know for sure. It's going to happen. We're going to die. Now, I do think a few people are able to exit the matrix while still alive. I don't think you have to wait till you're dead. It can happen. And I've sort of talked about, it's possible whole civilizations did it. The Maya, the Anasazi, there might've been whole groups that just decided, I'm done with this place. And they knew how to leave as a group. And I've heard some stories about that, but generally it seems like the most likely choice is after we die, when we have let go of the material bounds, let go of the story for a while, and we have this break. We have this break in the matrix. And I think this is our big opportunity, that all of the insanity that's going on right now is not by accident. There's a huge overturning going to happen with this reality. In fact, I think they're building a brand new sim. I think what we know is 5D. I think that's another layer, not up. It's a layer down. It's another dimension into the simulation. It's taking us deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's what's being built. The problem is while that's being moving from one to the other, there's an exit point. And we have the best chance I think we've ever had if we, and I think that's why all this is coming out now. It's like, this is the time, and the group and the archons know we're going to lose some souls. Some divine sparks are going to get out of here. Their focus is shut in as many as possible, knowing that some are going to get out. We have to realize we've got this massive opportunity. Let's use it completely. Because as we know, if we don't, we're going to get memory wiped. We're going to come right back down here. We're going to forget everything we've ever learned. All the things we've done in this life will be forgotten. All the work we've done will be forgotten. I know I don't want to have to go and start from scratch and learn all of this again. So I'm using this life as a gift to get the heck out of here once and for all.
And you know what? I think I'm pretty positive that those of us that have reach this level of information, I think we will get out. I think we know enough to get out. We just want to make sure there's no stone left unturned to make sure that does happen. So I think that's a really great place to leave this. I could talk to you for hours, and we're definitely going to have to do another few more of these for sure, maybe more regular, because we cross over on so many things. Howdy, where can people find you? Again, I know I messed up your website before, but it's your fault for naming it such a long thing.
It is totally my fault. Egyptian-wisdom-revealed.com. If you just did Egyptian Wisdom Revealed, it'll come up as the first one. There you can get information on all my books, even the new one, Exit the Cave, which, of course, if you go to Amazon, you can find all my books there, other sources. But I've got a PDF file for like $6 or something, so a cheap way of also getting the book simplistically. Then you can get that through the website. Howdy McCoskey Talks is over on my YouTube channel. Lots of stuff running. And, of course, make sure you're coming back and seeing what Tony has, like I do. You know, it's been valuable to hear a voice like yours as well. So that, you know, even though we haven't connected till today, I have felt connected to you for quite a long time, because it's like so many things are, I would say, the exact same thing. And it's great to finally do this. I just wish we could have a life where I could be on a plane, come over to Mexico and spend some time on a beach and just chat like humans are supposed to chat.
Yeah. Right. And that's the thing. I think, because I get so many emails, I'm sure you do as well, of people like, I really like your information. I feel so alone. I feel so alone here. No one gets me. No one gets me. And that's because we're surrounded with all these NPCs. So, of course, we're all going to feel alone and separate. And maybe that's part of, you know, the matrix as well. But we're going to leave it there. Howdy. Yeah. Thank you so much. You have a great day over there, and we'll speak again very soon.
Thanks, Tony. Cheers.